Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Engadget podcast. I'm managing editor Sherlyn Lowe. This week, in my co-host Devendra's absence, Matt Smith. Bah, 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 bah.
Bah, bah, bah. I always thought the fact that we weren't doing a video thing is because you just didn't want more readers and viewers to fall in love.
You mean I want them to?
What, with me? Not you.
Oh, dang it. I thought you meant me anyway. Hey, it's going to be a fun time.
I would never compliment you, Cher. Not on the podcast.
Well, speaking of betas, it me. Hi. We're going to talk also about, in this episode, our, you know, reviews of the Samsung products that were announced last week or so. And then some news from around the world of tech. So, if you're enjoying the podcast or you enjoy this episode, make sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. Leave us a review on wherever you're listening. And yeah, go over to our YouTube channel and hit follow for those notifications of when we go live. It's so much more fun when you can see us react facially, I think. So yeah, it's a fun time. All right, let's dig into Apple betas. Matt, we've been playing around with the iOS 26 developer beta. And this week, in fact, yesterday at the time of this recording, Apple has dropped developer beta seed 4, which is like about, right, historically about as close as it gets to the public version of the beta. Have you downloaded that yet?
I'm just checking the thing. I think I have, yeah. So I've been on top with the iOS beta because that's always the one I like to test out and then normally write about. So I'm checking now. I've been on developer beta 3, though.
Which is pretty close to, right?
Like, yeah. And it's definitely... So I downloaded it. I downloaded iOS 26 developer beta as soon as it was available. I've been playing with it since then. And it's been a lot of like nips and tucks. And we'll definitely get into some of those visual ones later, I think. But should I update it now? That seems like a really unwise decision to do during a podcast.
No, okay.
But rest assured, I will update after this recording.
Don't do it on the podcast, but yeah, we'll get around to it after. But I want to walk it back to like WWDC, right? Which is when you're saying you installed the developer beta. Mm. And I want to like caution all our listeners out there that, you know, developer betas are really like sometimes quite buggy. And I'm sure Matt will fill you in on some of those. It just usually means that third-party apps won't behave the same way usually on a stable release. So if you are, you know, still keen on trying out developer beta type things, you can just know you should back up your data or expect a lot of bugs and jitters. So we had iOS 26, macOS 26, iPadOS 26, watchOS 26, and tvOS 26. I think all of these had betas. VisionOS didn't have a developer beta. And across the board, as a refresher, you know, liquid glass design is, I think, the visual difference for all of them.
Yeah.
For a deeper dive into what's new, definitely go into the Dub episode of our podcast. But yes, Matt.
For sure. I mean, it's very nice for us as like employees at Engadget that now they're all just 26.
Yes.
That makes it way easier than watchOS 10 paired with iOS 18 paired with, I don't know, I think iPadOS.
iPadOS was 18 as well. Like they tied it to iOS.
Yeah.
But you are right. That exactly exemplifies why we hate those numbers and love 26. Even though it makes me sad to think of the year 2026 because we're so close. But yeah, no. So behind the scenes, so I've also been playing with developer beta and I'm not on seed 3. I think I'm on seed 3 now. I'm not on seed 4. And Matt and I think the first thing we did was you changed the background of our chat.
Yeah, this is in messages. So yeah, this is a weird one. This is such a US, rest of the world divide, right? Because Americans just love, or people who live in America as well, love iOS Messenger.
Yeah,
iMessage, yeah. Messages bubbles. Now, I guess, is the branding. But I'm just not a message user. And I'd say 50% of my entire messages use is testing betas and iOS versions. But it's getting there. It's getting more playful. It's getting more fun.
What else did we... what else did we like about the messages update when we started talking to each other? Because there was an issue, like you said, right? Neither of us use messages to talk to each other a lot. So like connecting again on messages took a lot of hunting each other down.
As is the case this year, like the last time I messaged you was for the iOS developer beta of 18. Yeah. So that's often the case. But it's, I think the main takeaway I took from it is it's just a bit more fun. It's a bit more WhatsApp-ish. Mm-hmm. So yeah, immediately I changed the background of mine and Cher's chat message, little chat to an embarrassing picture of her posing in some kind of Engadget hands-on video. I think
you say embarrassing, capacity. I say potato, so...
Oh, yeah, yeah, you did look like a potato.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I know. I agree. The potato famine, right?
Yeah. And then I did change it at least for the screenshots for a preview.
Oh, I don't care. Put it out there, baby.
Put it out there. People must see my face
more. People need to fall in love with me more.
But yeah, it's more playful. You can do polls. I mean, they've been gradually doing this over the last few years, right? You've been able to kind of do emoji reactions to things, you know, threaded chats. It's an incremental thing, but yeah, I think the big challenge for a lot of us users, if we're not already on the Messenger bus, is moving across from another one that already has our friends and family on it. That's the big hurdle. And the less you use it, the less you care about better features. All those features.
I mean, they improve group chats too. Not that you and I really did a lot of group chat testing, because I think the other Engadget testers weren't quite on iOS betas, and they were on, you know, iPadOS or Mac.
I think they also hate both of us.
Yeah, so no, they just can't chill with us. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, but some updates are coming to group chat, right? Which is like polls, which you and I did a poll within our own chat. But
we did a poll. You didn't reply. So I replied saying you didn't answer
my poll. I know, I voted. But let's get, I mean, we're kind of dancing around this too. We both had a lot of fun testing live translation.
Yeah, so this is like one of the big kind of, I'd say it was like an Apple Intelligence feature. It can't be anything else. But yeah, just these live translations and transcription and these kind of like advanced AI features, Apple Intelligence features that Apple's pretty good at, to be honest.
Really?
These ones, I would
say.
The
live translation.
I'd say the translation. Okay. Yeah. I mean, it was quite funny because, yeah, both of us, our other language abilities weren't really catered for in this current developer beta. So at the moment, it only connects to, let's say, mainstream European languages,
well,
I guess.
Well,
Spanish,
to be clear,
German,
to be clear,
French.
We were able to text in those languages. So yes. So message. So here's overall about live translation.
Yes, let's separate it out a bit.
Let's break it out.
Let's start with text.
Live translation as part of iOS 26 and I guess iPadOS 26 updates is getting embedded into messages, FaceTime, and calls. Messages is fairly straightforward. It's very similar to the implementation already on Pixel and I think some Samsung phones, which is where when you text someone and your system detects the language they're using, it will translate it to your phone's device language. So, for example, when Matt texted me in Japanese, it was converted to English on my end. And at least based on the beta, we could see that you could see the original like script and then also the
translated. Yeah, that's what I liked as well. Yeah. I like the ability. So, and then conversely, Sherlyn was texting me in Mandarin and I would get an English translation of that. And I like the ability, because it means if you don't quite get what a translation is, and this is machine translation, isn't it? So it's not always going to be
accurate,
on point,
right.
Especially with casual, slangy chats and stuff. So the ability to kind of check it yourself a bit, I really liked. I think that could be really useful going forward. But it was more fun, when we moved on to FaceTime. And so we FaceTime each other. Another thing we don't normally do,
well,
we? Yeah, we don't normally FaceTime each other.
Well, I FaceTime you. You just don't know. No, I'm kidding.
I just don't answer. Yeah. Hang up. And that was really fun, right? So like we said, I speak pretty decent Japanese. Sherlyn speaks Mandarin, functional Mandarin.
What do you mean? And, I'm fluent, please. Yes. Maybe functional.
It's much better than my Japanese.
Anyway, yes.
But yeah, in FaceTime, we could only really play with our kind of languages, which are a lot more fundamental in ability,
You were like, well, so what you were saying about the European languages is it applies to the FaceTime portion of live translation, which were, I think it was like German, Spanish, French, and maybe Italian were supported.
Yes, I think that's accurate.
And it has to do with like, have you watched the film Arrival, Matt?
No.
Yeah, I mean, it has a little to do with language and how like written languages are easier to sort of make sense of than spoken, because there's so much to do with inflections and accents, I think, in spoken. So I suspect with FaceTime, the spoken component of it was so much more complex when you factor in like Asian languages that are just completely different in sounds and shape. So I think with written with the European languages, they're either the Latin-based or the...
Sorry, I'm doing some fact-checking. So for phone and FaceTime, it does support Japanese.
We didn't just see the Chinese option in the betas, though. Yeah. I have these screenshots to prove it. Anyway, we're not going to go too deep into like evaluating these features and like too deep into the details. It's entirely possible that for developer beta seed, whatever we're on, that they weren't supported in FaceTime yet. But anyway, I was just speculating. It was easier to get out faster because they're probably easier to make sense of spoken.
It would make sense.
But yeah, the way it works in FaceTime is, and I think this matters to a lot of people, which is why we're spending a lot of time on it now. Like when you talk to your grandmother or something and you don't necessarily speak Italian or Spanish and you're of Spanish heritage, you see this, like, you see them talk, and then there's, like, you have to turn, it's built into live caption, so you'll see the captions for what they're saying, and then it's converted into your system's default language. So when Matt was speaking to me in German, what did you say in German, Matt?
Do I have to do the German? I don't want a recording of the German.
Okay,
but I said I
okay.
Have to do
well,
my,
you said
I
something
have to do
about
my homework.
Two beers and swine.
Yeah, and a wine. Two beers and a wine. Please. I said, I think I was polite, at least.
I think I said...
And it got that. It got that perfectly well. And, I can't, what were you
well,
trying to
I
say?
Well, I was saying something...
Conversely, you were speaking in, attempting to speak in Spanish.
I said something about salsa verde.
Yeah, and it translated to blue
green
couch.
Sofa. What is green your couch. Spanish green is sofa. So bad. Verde, it's obviously green.
Remember, like, both of us have been using Duolingo for quite a while. When we were forced, when we twisted each other's arms to try and speak these languages to each other,
we realized
we fell apart. We completely fell apart.
How badly Duolingo failed us.
Yes, it does not prepare you for a language, which I think a lot of Duolingo learners already know if they've ever gone on vacation and tried to
that
use
owl
those
is all,
non-existent language skills.
Yeah. I was just like, bless aquí? Yo tengo?
This is literally what I was dealing with, listener.
Yes, on the FaceTime call. It was very much. And then shockingly, live translation captured all of that fairly well. Again, like I said, it's not like it had a lot, like Matt's been saying, it's not like it had a lot of complexity and like colloquialisms to deal with because we're clearly not fluent speakers of German or
we
French.
We basic.
I mean, Spanish.
We very basic.
Speak for yourself. But had it, I think, been able to handle Japanese and Mandarin, we would have given it quite more of a challenge.
Run for its money.
Anyway.
Yeah, for sure. One feature which actually we haven't talked about yet, Cher, but I finally had it work for me is call screening.
Yes!
Which again, I think is a useful one. So the problem is with call screening, A, I save all my numbers so I know who's calling me. B, I have a very bad habit of answering my phone.
You're such a weirdo. I'm the opposite on both of those counts.
But we don't, in the UK, we don't have, well, yeah, we don't have such an issue of spam calls and spam messages to the degree that I know people in the US do. But so not to overshare on the podcast, but I recently had a tooth extraction.
How
and then
that
I was on my way home, full of local anesthetic, just loving my life. And then I missed a bunch of calls from the dentist office. From the dentist office assistant. So a number I didn't have. And so once I got out of the underground, out of the subway, I got phone signal. And then I was delivered into the phone call tab. There was like a text message saying, "Hi, this is so-and-so from your dentist's office. You didn't pay. Please pay." So now I owe my dentist's office. But I also know the feature works. And it was really good. Like,
I have a question.
So you can screen the call. And I've got a voice note. And also, I'm not sure about you, but I hate trying to listen back to voicemails
as well.
Well,
so like I've had that for a while. And I that's why I have a question. Was this in your phone app or your messages app?
Phone app.
So in the new phone app in iOS 26, you're supposed to have, like you said, the call screening, sort of not quite call screening, but like they filter out calls from unknown numbers, like you said. And so you were able to go over there and see that you had a call from an unknown number, which is separate from the way it's currently being treated, which is I still have to deny calls. And when I deny calls, then they're sent to voicemail. And then the transcript shows up under there of what they said.
Ah, that's interesting.
Is that the same?
I'm taking another look now.
And I also want to explain while you're doing that, Matt, that like with call screening, it's part of this suite of screening features coming to iOS 26. One of them is in the phone app, the other is in the messages app where spam or scam texts are being detected and also filtered out of your main messages inbox and into a spam tab folder, which I think Matt also experienced.
Not to not to break the fourth wall, but yeah, just let's just delete everything I said. I think this is just what you're saying. I think it was just a voicemail.
Well, I mean, look.
No, it just says network provider voicemail.
But it looks quite different, I will say, from what I'm used to seeing. I can pull up an example from my phone.
Well, we'll fact check it before I add it to my preview.
The phone app did get redesigned. So like whatever you're showing me looks completely different from what I'm used to on iOS 18's phone app. So that, but back to the messages thing, did you ever get spam? I know that I try a lot of times to fish you in our testing.
Poorly.
I send you a lot of HR recruitment texts during our testing. Yeah. Did you encounter any of these?
This is also your passive aggressive way of trying to hint to me that you're in demand and Engadget is lucky to have.
Well, more like I'm trying to tell you to find another job, Matt. Find another job. But yeah, did you get any of
them? Yeah, I don't really have that issue. I have like one regular spammer who texts me from a phone store that does not exist in the UK anymore. So
like that TV show.
I'm never going to fall for it. But yeah, we don't have such a big spam issue. So that's something I kind of lean towards you towards to see whether that's been helping you or not.
Yeah, and to clarify for the listeners, one of the reasons I haven't been able to check this out is because I don't test the beta on my main phone. So the beta phone that I use for testing doesn't have a cell number attached and therefore doesn't get spam, which is a blessing. But in this current situation, a curse. Anyway, we were able to test other things, right? Like Matt, were there other features you like? I mean, we can talk about really quickly some of the redesigned apps like...
Camera. Let's talk about cameras.
There you go. Let's go.
Perfect.
Camera.
We're in sync. Yeah, yeah. So this time around, Apple's kind of, instead of like adding stuff, which it's been doing over the last few years, like adding new features, whether it's a portrait mode or cinematic video. Now, they are all still there, but the phone kind of just slims it all down. And when you first launch it, you can either choose to take a photo or a video. Now, if you want all those other options again, you can just hold and they'll kind of expand outwards. Again, part of the new redesign that we'll talk about in a bit. But I like it. My whole thing with like the iPhone is that largely it's Luddite proof. It's foolproof. You can give your brand new iPhone to anyone and they'll take a half decent photo. They'll know exactly what to do. Things are where they should be. There's not so much mess that you might touch something and change a mode and mess up a picture. So I really like how it looks. And what's funny is, and it's such a weird Apple thing to do, is like some of the in-depth settings like f-stops and resolutions and stuff, they're all buried away in a kind of six dot sub menu in the corner that you can also access from the lower bar of the camera interface.
So there's two ways to access,
and it's very odd
thing.
To find it seems quite odd to have two ways, but I guess the idea is for traditionalists, they're used to having it at the bottom, and then curiosity might get the better of you and you'll hit the six dot one in the corner. I don't know. But yeah, generally I find it easier to use, smoother. And yeah, I don't want a camera interface filled with bits and pieces and faff. Are you just taking a photo of me now to prove a point?
No. I'm playing around with my beta phone, which is an iPhone 16, and it has a camera control on it. So actually, as you were talking, I was wondering how camera control interacts with the new redesign, right? Like if I swiped by accident and, you know, suddenly changed a mode, because like you said, it's just video and photo at the bottom now. And there was a setting with camera control before where like if you selected it and swiped, you would swipe between modes. So you would swipe from video to photo to portrait. And I hated that. Like, I don't want to do that. So I'm trying to figure out if that has affected camera control at all. And I'm making sure. It seems still tight, but it's basically making camera control a little redundant, a little less necessary.
Well, that's always a finer motor control thing. I never used camera control. I didn't use it to switch between modes.
Yeah, I just turned it off.
I was just checking. At the moment, I have it set for Zoom, which is an interesting one to go for.
I think it's smart. Zoom's really like one of my favorite ones. I don't know that I would ever use the depth, which is aperture, or exposure.
Yeah.
Exposure is not something I want to use a dial for, but Zoom is, so makes sense. I like that also, and I think we're sort of stepping on this already, we might as well get into it, that like the camera redesign, a large part of it is also the liquid glass redesign, right? So it looks nice, it looks good, and then when you swipe up from the bottom to access all those other buttons that are easier to reach, the touch points are also bigger. I kind of mentioned this when we first talked about the liquid glass design, but I want to say that we can confirm now that we've spent some time with it, these liquid glass components are actually bigger. They're actually better for accessibility because you don't have to hit a small, you know, target area to access certain things, there it's just easier to get the right button push now, right, Matt?
I also think because it's across pretty much every part of, well, we're just talking specifically about iOS here, but I think it's true across Mac OS and iPad as well. The buttons, there's just consistency now. So I think because a lot of apps over the last few iterations of iOS, they've kind of been introduced new, so they have like the new, a new more polished style. At this point, Apple's kind of leveled up across the board.
Yeah.
And so there's just consistency now. Like there's, it's always a circle or like a pill shape, and it's always about the same size, and it all kind of interacts with your touch. Yeah. What did you think about, like, just point blank, what did you think using Liquid Glass?
I liked it. I hate that I like it. I guess I don't hate that I like it. I think I'm embarrassed because it seems like there's so much hate for it online. I mean, do you know, Matt, what they've changed over, since the beginning of DubDub or since the end of DubDub until now at Seed 4? Like, what are the actual changes to Liquid Glass? There's been some transparency changes, right? Like,
that's largely it, at least in my experience. Like, I try and keep apprised of all the notes as these developer betas come in and out. But a part of it is when you get these developer betas, it's a bit of a mystery box as to which features are available from the outset, unless you really dive into like the literature and stuff. So you'd be excited about a feature and it just isn't ready. Like, for example, even like Apple's upgraded like your flight ticket passes in
Wallet.
Right,
you mentioned this.
And that has all kinds of cool features. And then as an idiot, I installed the beta on my main phone and went to America twice, Germany once with a beta.
Stop jet setting. Phone. That's your problem, Matt.
I know. It's a brag. I travel. And so that kind of thing, which obviously requires input from flight carriers to update their apps to integrate these kind of whizzier features like luggage tracking and like, I'm trying to think what the other, this is the one I really wanted, a kind of a gate update right. for your ticket. Like, that would be perfect. That's a great idea of a feature to add.
I find that kind of strange because I've always had this ability with the United app, right? Like, and I also just predominantly fly United, and United Airlines, for all its flaws and all its, you know, all the things we can criticize about United, has one of the best apps in the business. Like, it is really good. It will tell you, like, you have 30 minutes left to walk to your gate. And then in the little dynamic island, it will tell you which gate number and all of that stuff. You'll get...
But is that America to America?
I've only used it domestic so far. I don't... Because United International... I don't fly United International.
Yeah, don't. I swore off United.
No, I'm only like Virgin or Singapore Airlines.
Well, when I think share, I think...
Singapore Airlines.
Virgin or Singapore.
Anyway, I mean, you're not wrong.
Now, do you want to ask me what I think about Liquid Glass?
Yeah, I was about to. You didn't have to prompt me, but we like the, so I like Liquid Glass. I have a question about some of your word choices in your piece about iOS 26, but tell me more about Liquid Glass and how you think it's liquidy.
That's the thing. I think the thing I took issue with is, you know, when they were promoing it at WWDC and you had these designers or actors pretending to be designers moving around glass circles and bits of perspex. And I'm like, that is so insane. How does that translate to these squishy menus and liquid movement? I found it so like you were doing graphic design in high school levels of this does not seem conducive to reality. The eventual product, yeah, it's nice. It is nice. I think everyone's initial complaints though were fair.
Yeah.
It especially like Apple talked up the ability to kind of even change, you could even change all of your app icons into a liquid glass look, which again added transparencies and kind of shininess and kind of glassy little moments to it all. That plus a drop down menu plus another overlay, and things start to get very messy because there is a degree of transparency all the way through. And it was things where, like, because there's a lot more uniformity across it, so, like, you'd have a circular transparency on top of another one that was slightly ajar
right.
on top of the squarish icon tiles. And it did look messy. It didn't look finished. But then this is a developer beta. This is what it's for.
Yeah, to iron out.
I like how it's being ironed out in this way. And why would I imagine that when, like, designers are designing an OS, they're doing it in a very straight-laced, almost like a brand newly booted up phone with no new apps, no notifications,
so it's not
and they've just gradually... Yeah, so they don't know how, like, Joe iPhone
They don't know how like notifications can stack phone. Up and look really ugly.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. And like how sloppy we can be with our own notifications and how we set up our phones and stuff like that. I'm sure for like their ideal setup, it looked gorgeous, but that's not the reality of it. And I think this is a closer middle ground between their hopes and dreams for liquid glass and the world of 2024.
Yeah, I mean, like I'm one of those people that unfortunately has all these like unread alert icons or badges all over.
She has friends, people,
yes,
brag.
More than you. I have like 10,000 unreads on my like Gmail app or whatever, right? The icon. And so like the how does that work with liquid glass? I mean, I haven't, again, looked too closely because like I said, mine's a beta phone. The beta phone's fairly minimalist. But yeah, I wonder how much more cluttered it would look if it had to deal with those real world, real life elements as well. But I mean, again, I think Apple has historically been using these sorts of betas as a good like sort of way to gather feedback and tweak things and change things. And they've gotten a lot better about being, you know, a bit more open about it. I mean, they're never going to be fully open about it, but they'll listen, they'll make changes, and then they'll be like, yeah, we listened and we made changes. That's really as much as you'll get.
Although, like, as obviously, like I've said, we've seen like the transparency reduce over the iterations. I personally would love a toggle to increase or reduce the transparency as to the kind of level I want.
I suspect it won't be easy to implement.
I know. Well, you say that, but they've been able to implement these quite substantial changes to that aesthetic.
Have you noticed where, like, what the threshold is for them to flip between white on black font, sorry, white font on black background, and then black font on white background? You know what I mean? Like, when it's transparent, the color of what's behind the transparent panel matters, because then what color of the font you choose is important, because there's a lot of shades in between where it's just dark enough that you can't see black font, but light enough that you can also see white font. And that's really tricky. And I think even if they gave you a toggle to slide, it's not something that people want to play around with all the time. So you're going to want to set it to something and then forget it, right? If they do that,
but then I want to be able to set it to what the level I want.
Right, right, right. So, but if you do that, then you're still going to run into the issue where like on your set transparency level, the Slack, you know, messages page isn't going to be readable because, or like notifications on top of the Slack chat page, for example.
Oh,
can be
no,
read.
I won't get Sherlyn's.
Sorry,
messages.
We got WhatsApp, and I, you know, Slack. Have you on iMessage as well.
Oh, we got. Oh,
I'll
no,
just FaceTime
Apple
you
now. Oh no, in German.
In yeah, no. I
One of the things I did like, and maybe we can just wrap it up with this last bit, is also they've just moved, finally, like the search box, the typing box across all these kind of base Apple apps to the bottom, which is what it should have been ever since these phones have got bigger and bigger and bigger. Maybe since iPhone 7, let's say. Like, and I remember like one of the first apps that I was able to type into the box in the bottom was Chrome on iOS. And that's such a jarringly weird thing.
I know, it just jumped right back up.
Yeah, yeah. But now it's everywhere. And it was one of the... It's so weird given how across the board the liquid glass design is, but the first thing I truly noticed and went, oh, that's a truly useful design change, was in settings, where and I kept looking at the top to where to tap to search for the settings I was looking for, but now it's at the bottom where it should be, like right next to your thumbs. No need to reach, you can do it one-handed. It's and that's across everything.
Good,
like photos,
finally.
Music, finally, very much. And again, it speaks to that consistency I was talking about. It makes it easier to use these Apple devices.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it used to be only on, like you said, I think Safari, right? Safari was one of the few apps that had that. But everywhere else to search your messages, it was at the top. Search your photos was at the top. And I hated that. So I reiterate, I agree with Matt. Easier for like putting it nearer your thumb for typing things too.
First time for everything.
I do want to shout out the other OSs really quickly. iPadOS 26, I know, and also probably for macOS 26, both Devendra and Nate have shared some of their thoughts with me, and I think we can all agree Spotlight, Search, and Shortcuts are some of the most interesting things. I had a really good time digging into Shortcuts and figuring out how to use the new Use Model function, which is basically allowing you to access either Apple Intelligence or ChatGPT's models and do things. So you would basically, it's programming, right? Matt, I don't know how much of a programmer you are. I'm kind of pro.
I doubt you're remotely one either, but that's why I'm waiting
well,
for you to dig
no.
your own hole. Carry
Listen,
on.
Listen, I can tell you this much. Like, I know enough to get around, okay? And I do get around. And I will say, so for Shortcuts, as a refresher, you basically do things. It's light programming. It's like if this and that. It's like set a condition. If that condition is met, do a certain set of actions. You can loop them until another condition is met, while the condition is met. And so, for example, you want to organize your files when you drag them onto your desktop. That's one of the examples I saw. You can set it so, you know, the action of dragging files onto your desktop triggers a query. The query can be using Apple Intelligence or ChatGPT. Look at these files and tell me their contents. And if their contents are related to crocheting or, you know, bookmarking, then sort them into these specific folders, right? So using use model, you have to feed it a prompt rather than really like code step by step, which was jarring for me because I'm not a prompt engineer and I don't think that that exists yet, but eventually it might. I just think it's interesting because like what I saw in some examples were like people asking for Boolean functions, which is like yes or no, right? True or false. But the response wasn't in response to a Boolean yes or no. It was like more like a switch. So like a three things might come out, three different things. And if it's one, put it into this. If it's two, put it into that. And if it's three, put it into that. And so I was like, it's confusing. And it turns out that the use model situation will be smart enough to like give you the output that is needed. So I was like, all right, fine. I haven't played enough
it's
with just, this.
It's almost a different language.
Yeah.
In apparently order to get a similar result.
And I'm suspicious of whether it'll really perform as behave. I'm still thinking of some ways to like use it. I am thinking because you can use things like dictation, right? So I'm thinking every meeting that I have, so from now on, if I dictate into a shortcut, find three things that I need to do and add it to my to-do list, for example, right? Listen to the transcript or read this transcript and you know, search for any to-dos and add them to my to-do list. That would be a dream. Anyway, shortcuts is very intriguing. And then, Matt, I don't know if you had thoughts about some of the new apps that were added this year, but the games app, I know you were shading on it a little bit.
Because it's not for me, and I'm a gamer, I say. I have a Switch 2. I have a PS5 Pro. I'm pointing over my shoulder.
I have a Switch 2, too. Got it on day one. Somebody didn't get theirs on day one.
Because I was busy doing my job.
At a games show, right?
Yes.
Well, look.
But yeah, I don't know why you've decided that the games, this new games app on iOS is where you're going to die.
I think, again, with the caveat that like my phone for the beta isn't the best example, I think that when used with my full gaming habits on my actual iPhone, that it will show me more matching games or train miner games or like freaking Candy Crush types of games that I have yet to discover.
I really wish that this episode of the podcast was on video because you could see how my raised eyebrow is also almost in my hairline.
Jumped top to the top of your, which by the way, speaking of your hairline, do you want to talk about Genmoji before we move on to other things?
I wondered what you were going to say then. Jesus. Yeah, that's a very organic segue. I love that. Yeah, so we're moving back into Apple Intelligence now, like more features. And remember, Apple Intelligence is still a super recent addition, and Apple's faced a lot of flack for the kind of
what no
it
updates to
has
Siri.
Delivered on and what it hasn't.
Yeah.
Yes, very much. And that's just a quick a side note there. Yeah, like there is no major Siri update, refresh, rebrand this year. It's pretty much Siri as it was, obviously augmented by these new features we're talking about. But yeah, let's talk about Genmoji and...
and visual intelligence, I would say. But also Image Playground, I think is what you're thinking of.
Image Playground. Yeah, so it's an interesting one. We have different experiences with Genmoji. I used to. This is the thing. I'm on the beta now. I used to love Genmoji last generation, iOS 18 Genmoji. There was something great about how Apple had kind of squeezed my friends and family's faces into the emoji that, you know, we've grown up on our iPhones, like in the same style. They'd somehow managed to squeeze my face into an emoji that still kind of looked like me. It just had my essence somehow. And I do not know how they did it. And it was kind of janky, but I liked it because it looked like, you know, a noughties, a 2010s emoji.
Noughties.
And they've upgraded the model now. So they're kind of higher res, crisper pictures. But they've lost the nuance of it being Apple, and they've lost the nuance of it looking like me. And my main issue is I am bald across the board. Now, listen, my hairline is in retreat, and that is totally fine. But these ones, Sherlyn, can you explain with words what I look like
in the new Genmoji? Matt, in all the different versions he's tried to generate, cannot escape the fact that Apple somehow can't see that he has hair, and so.
And that's why I've decided I will only ever use Android phones from now on.
He's given up. Yeah, it's a Pixel all the way, baby. No, I mean, okay, so I don't know that I felt like there was a huge difference for myself, but I can see that I saw the emoji that Matt's talking about. And yeah, I agree. He did look represented in the first generation of Genmoji. And in the second one, I don't know. Maybe there's just been more hair loss in the last year, you know? So
what? Digitally?
I don't know, digitally or in real life, but are you using the same source images?
Is it just me? Like, I know you're not an American share, but don't those new emoji look like more American versions of me?
That is such a strange thing to think about. I haven't... No?
I think it's like the blue suit.
Oh, okay. It's the outfits. Is maybe. It because I think that you might be using different source images, or are they...
But they're all different. They're all different photos,
and they all have suits. That's so funny.
Yeah, and I do not really wear a suit that often.
No, you don't.
But anyway, tell me about your experience. Right. So with old and new.
When me and Matt were talking about the Genmoji, I was struck because I was like, "Wait, hang on." My initial experience with Genmoji, I don't remember if I talked about on the podcast before, but was not great. Like, it just kept representing me in different ethnicities, like. There was Blasian Sherlyn, there was Wasian Sherlyn, there was Latinasian Sherlyn. It was just like, what? None of these are me. One of them, like the skin tone was extremely dark. And I was like, I am barely even tan. Like I don't even go out in the sun much. Like I'm a vampire. And it was very weird. It got my face features right, I think.
Sometimes, like when you showed me, there was such... With yours, yeah. Like from the last gen, yeah. There was such variance.
Yeah. Every single picture also was different, yeah.
And some of them looked like old Sherlyn from when I very first met you.
What did I look like Sherlyn. Back then? Jeez.
Young, oh, you young, know.
Cute.
Healthy.
Fresh. Healthy.
Fresh. Fresh.
Welcome to the Engadget fresh. Podcast episode called Matt way. Roast Sherlyn.
Yeah, what a creepy way to describe a coworker. Yeah. My healthy. Sherlyn, you look fresh.
And healthy.
Yes.
Oh, God.
So yes. What about the new Genmoji then?
So the other, again, I've been caveating throughout this episode, but the other stuff about the new Genmoji is that, like, I have to rely on the, what, 3 selfies in this compared to the 3 million selfies on my other phone. Like, I don't have a lot of source images to play around with. They're, like, still kind of not representative for me. I don't feel very seen in any version of Genmoji so far. I think that might have more to do with my self-image than anything, but I just will wait until I get more like the public beta on my phone, like my actual main phone, before I make any judgment.
Say, like you're saying as well, like in regard to mine, like different photos will generate a very different Genmoji at times.
Exactly.
I mean, the benefit is, the point with the Genmoji is you can describe what you're doing. So even if you say playing football in a photo you use, you can be doing different stuff through the Genmoji generation. And that's the other cool thing to move into image playgrounds. That's now got more substantial hooks thanks to ChatGPT.
Yeah, yeah.
So they can use ChatGPT models now. And we were talking about this and I've been testing it, and Sher was like, oh, is it more photorealistic now? And I was like, I don't think so. But then I never really try for photorealistic results. Normally, yeah, that's not my aim. But there's an unusual, despite the, like, there are several models you can pick from now, like the OG generation, mm-hmm. the OG version of Image model, Playground, yeah. You can mm-hmm. choose a sketch, drawing type things, cartoon, 3D, image type things. Now you've got ChatGPT, and that has its own few options, but it also has ChatGPT no style, and that means you can kind of create the prompt for the style within your prompt.
Yeah, so Studio Ghibli.
And that's, Studio Ghibli or photorealistic or in the style of a Netflix thriller or whatever you want to, however you want to phrase it. There's now like a bigger range of creative options for these things, and that makes it more interesting to me. I found, again, the first time it came around, it was quite flat, limiting, boring. I mean, we'd it's a bit of a curse of Apple and AI, but we'd already seen much more impressive feats from OpenAI and all these other ones when it comes to image generation. Mm-hmm, that mm-hmm. Apple's ones were a bit mediocre or dated by the time they got here. This kind of catches up a little bit.
Yes, I agree.
So, yeah, so you can make some kind of intellectual property.
Ah.
That's the word I was looking for. Yeah. So you can be a bit more spicy with your choices of prompts and dance around intellectual property rights if you want to here. So there's a bit more utility to it. I mean, are you going to be using it a lot? I won't. I'll probably be using Gemmoji more, and that makes me bald. So what does that say about image play?
Don't do it, basically, right? Can I, I will just say, Matt, have you played around with the Meta AI things in Instagram where you can also create pictures based on like pictures of you and then, you know, set yourself or drawing of yourself on a runway or something in space?
I only ever, the Meta AI features, yeah, only ever so briefly at the start.
Yeah.
What I found though, you go first.
Oh, well, I was just going to say, I found it easier to adjust the way I looked in those, right? I could be like, change the teeth to a bit smaller or something, like, you know, and it would make me look like me again. I don't know why I decided I have gigantic teeth, but I'm just like, that's not me.
Your body image is getting...
I know, it's very strange.
By technology.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Well, funny you say that though, because I did use Image Playgrounds to generate an image because of something that happened to me. So I was riding the tube in London last week, and there was like a torrential downpour of rain, and somehow the rain got in
because it was one of those trains that goes in.
I know, right? But the train went in and out, so it was getting exposed to the rain. Yeah. And it was somehow fitting through the air filter. Ew. I think because it was so sudden that the train hadn't switched modes or something. So there was water dripping out of the filter, and it went on me, which probably gives you, Cher is already having a panic attack. And so I made Image Playground generate like an image of it. And it's quite good. Like my face looks really... I sent it to you on messages. You can have a look if you want.
You did?
Yeah. Anyway, I uploaded that on Instagram. It's the first thing using AI I've ever posted where people believed it was the real deal.
You know what's funny? You know how we were complaining that the... Oh, I just saw the picture. It's very good. I just translated your Japanese to Mandarin for me.
There you go. It's erratic, but that's a beta, so I can't complain too much about the erraticness, but yeah, it's erratic.
Anyway, look, I think we're not done, obviously, with checking out all the different versions of iOS, iPadOS, macOS, and even watchOS, which I will shout out, but we haven't spent significant time with it yet just because it's difficult to get beta on a watch through a phone that's also running a beta, so multiple devices needed to be updated. Anyway, obviously, come to Engadget.com to check out more like written and in-depth like previews of what to expect when your iPhones and your iPad get updated. I will point out that I was not a fan of visual intelligence, but we can get into that later on. I also want to say, if you have any questions about certain features that were announced at WWDC, you want to learn more about them, how they work, or how to work around them, send us your thoughts to podcast@engadget.com. We're always looking for like ideas on what kinds of coverage we can provide y'all. I can dig into a feature and like teach you how to turn it off or, you know, make it work better for you. So definitely let us know. Okay, we're going to move on and spend a quick moment talking about these Samsung reviews. I don't think we need to talk too long about them, but... our review of the Galaxy Z Fold 7 is already live. It went up last week, and this coming Friday, July 25th, will be the on-sale date for all of these Samsung devices that were announced. That would be the Fold 7, the Flip 7, and the Watch 8. The Fold 7, I mean, I think we're all very impressed by, and you can go take a look at our review. The Watch 8, we have a review in progress up. It's a bit difficult to test over like 1 week or 2 weeks because a lot of those features require like days of overnight wear and then to even get a reading, and then you still gotta, you know. But
so I am in the midst of reviewing the Z. That was the sound of it. That was the sound
do it again.
Of a Z Flip. Oh, ASMR. That was a Z Flip 7.
Whoa, oh my God.
So yeah, I'm reviewing that at the moment, but I also got sent the Watch 8 as well. Now, I'm actually wearing it.
Yeah, do you like it?
And you know, Cher, you know this is a very rare
for you, yeah,
occurrence for me to wear an Android
I wish
wear,
they sent
Google
me
wear,
one.
Whatever they want to call it. Oh, you got sent them and then you foisted it on someone else to do the work.
Well,
classic, Cher Lynn.
I was asked about it, but I did ask someone else to do the work. This is true.
But it's nice. So this, I'm wearing the Watch 8 Classic and it is nice. It goes for that sad white man that we all have inside of us. It looks like a fancy watch. It has like a
excuse me,
what do you call it?
I don't have a white man inside of what. But anyway, go on.
Again, your body image is spiraling. There's a word for it. Don't know what the word is. If you could just use AI to put the word here, it's got like a crunkled
squircle.
No, not squircle. Like the crunky in and out chunk. Like there's bits. Oh God, portrait mode. You see these bits that are chunks.
Oh, the teeth of the gear.
Knurled. Knurled is the word.
Knurled. Knurled.
Yeah.
I think I saw it in, what was it? It was in Amy's piece. I saw that word. Knurled. Yes, go on.
Knurled. Anyway, so the knurled edge on the rotating bezel is very nice, and it makes it look less like a cringy bit of smartwatch, in my opinion. I'm really pleasantly surprised.
To be clear, you have the Watch 8 Classic, which is the one with the spinning bezel that has the knurled edges. Yes. Yes, go on.
Knurled. And that's the one. So that's one I've got, and I'm gradually testing it, and I've had the same issue where it's hard to write anything in 4 days when everything takes 6 days of data to tell you
for anything. The watch specifically.
But I'm really pleasantly surprised at the moment, because I'm an Apple Watch person. There's such a learning curve just to get the basics down, let alone the new features. So I'm gradually re-educating myself.
I want to ask about the antioxidant feature. Have you taken it?
I haven't done it. Should I?
It only takes 5 seconds. Do it now and then tell us your result. You might have to go to Samsung Health, scroll down near the bottom, and then you'll see antioxidant index, and you'll have to remove your watch too. But as you do that, I'm going to shout out also that our Flip 7 review is in the works and hopefully up by the end of this week, so you can all make your decisions as to whether to buy these things. I will also point out that before you go spending your money on Samsung devices, know that this week Google announced it's Made by Google event is happening August 20th.
Yes.
So you might just need to wait a little bit before you can have a better sense of what the industry actually has to offer. Just hold out a little bit more. I would say, like, if the Google event's August 20th and likely doing the Pixel 10 and whatever, which was leaked, by the way, this week as well. Pixel 10, Pixel Watch 4, and Pixel 10 Pro Fold or something are coming. So yes, we're seeing Matt's antioxidant index results, and it is very low. Might you be just a bit more toxic than me?
I don't know. What was yours? Wasn't yours 42?
Mine was 41, was my highest score.
Oh!
Well, what are you?
So, we can maintain. I'm 46, so we maintain the most toxic editor at Engadget. So, continues to be.
A quick nugget for our podcast listeners. So, I refused to believe that my reading could be this low, but I've recently had it verified because I went for my annual physical. My blood test results came back, and like I instantly got a prescription from my doctor for vitamin D, which is one of the antioxidants I think is considered part of this.
But having said that, you said you're a vampire and you don't go out in the sun. So this is all
tracks. Checking. Yeah, I think I don't eat enough leafy, dark vegetables, and B, you know.
Just to wrap up the Z Flip as well, like Shannon says, we'll hopefully have the review out for you guys to read this week.
Do you like it?
It's a lovely phone. So like we've seen from Motorola a few years ago, this isn't a YouTube video.
You're holding up the phone, yes.
And Sherlyn's pleasure. Yeah, I'm just showing a phone to two other people. But it's like, it's edge-to-edge screen. And they've like remanufactured how they make that front screen. So it's even more minimal bezels. Yeah. And it looks really nice. And Ben's enjoying it. He's telling me, perfect. This is what it's all about. And then the screen itself is bigger, which is great. And it's more traditional smartphone shape. It's still not quite the same ratios as an iPhone or an S25, but it's a little bit closer.
It's wider, the internal screen.
Exactly that.
I didn't like that.
But compared to the Fold, you feel like it's the middle child of the family. I say that as a overlooked middle child myself.
Underlooked.
Like the cameras, they just have not changed in years, and they're really starting to like feel their age now.
How's the battery life? Because it got a bigger battery this time.
So it got 300 milliamp hours more, and it's switched to a different processor as well. And from the tests I've run several times now, it's quite mad. To like 21 hours video rundown. Yeah. That's really, really impressive for a foldable.
How long is it lasting in real world use?
A day and a half.
That's good.
Do think with data, but with data, it definitely. I feel like maybe the Exynos chip that they have this year might be optimized for that kind of stuff more than data and Wi-Fi and signal and stuff. But that's I was really worried because, and maybe that's just because last time I reviewed an Exynos Samsung was probably wow, S7 era. So it's been a while.
Yeah.
So I was kind of
very
worried about the battery life. Okay. No, not so far.
Are you playing games on
it? Okay. It's but very basic games, like just the kind of games you get on Netflix, which have been very enjoyable. But yeah, like it's the cameras that make it feel like it's not a flagship. And I think with this price being what it is.
Yep. What was it again? 1100, right?
1100, yeah. Which is still a lot of money, you know. You can get an incredible phone for 800. Yeah, so it's a bit, I think I'm less enamored than I was last year, which is a shame because it's still a better phone.
Than before, yeah.
Yeah, so that's the discussion me and Shirley will be having this week when we come up with a review score.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's good to know where you're at. I'm a bit disappointed that the cameras are so bad, but everything else seems fine. I will remind the audience what I was just saying, that Google's event is coming up August 20th.
Oh, no.
New Pixel phones. Honestly, and if you can get like a nice little Pixel 10 for, oh, not the Pixel 10, Pixel 10 Pro even, the smaller one, for like, 1,000, that might just be the best, because the Pixels have the best cameras in the game, in my opinion. But we shall see, and I won't dwell too long on that. Come back for an episode where we preview the Google event, and also we'll be covering it live. It's going to be happening here in New York. So, one shout out to a big piece of news this week. At the start of the week, I believe, there was news of a Microsoft SharePoint server vulnerability, and it put just about 10,000 organizations at risk. I mean, an emergency patch was released, but it remains actively exploited to the point where I believe it was a nuclear weapons agency in the U.S. that had been breached using this specific SharePoint hack. That's something that we're finding out today, Wednesday, as we're recording this episode. So clearly, this is like an ongoing situation. According to our report written by Steve Dent, no sensitive or classified information was reportedly compromised in the attack on the Nuclear Weapons Agency. And this was, by the way, a report that we saw on Bloomberg. So yeah, I mean, it's not good news. And Matt, we were talking about how much we hate Microsoft sharing services.
Not enough that I want to see a nuclear weapons agency be affected by vulnerabilities. But yeah, and I think the scary bit is SharePoint's such a pervasive in so many companies, in so many orgs, wheelhouse of software. And that's why it's come to, not why it's come to this, but why hackers have chosen to attack this kind of software.
I'll just read you a little bit more from this story about the US, the Nuclear Weapons Agency. So it occurred at an arm of the Energy Department responsible for producing and dismantling nuclear arms. It's called the National Nuclear Security Administration. The company, the agency's spokesperson told Bloomberg that on Friday, July 18th, so it was only like being written about now, but on Friday, July 18th, the exploitation of a Microsoft SharePoint zero-day vulnerability began affecting the Department of Energy. A very small number of systems were impacted, and all impacted systems are being restored. It only affected SharePoint for on-premises servers. And this is funny. The Department of Agency said it was minimally impacted because it widely uses Microsoft 365 Cloud and very capable cybersecurity systems. So,
what is this, sponsored content or something?
I don't know, but from one not great Microsoft product to another is why they're, you know, I don't know. I mean, look, I couldn't tell you if it would have, you know, been better if they had used Dropbox. Can you imagine the Department of Energy using Dropbox?
Yeah, I mean, SharePoint is what? It's more of a server thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah. It's a server thing. So you would imagine that's a bit more safe and stable. But anyway, so something that's ongoing, something we'll keep an eye on, but also that sheds light on the technology that these very major and important bodies and organizations around the world use. And really, please be thinking about your security in the systems that you all are using. So that was really it for other news this week. I don't want to dwell too long on that. I hope y'all have enjoyed our chat so far. But before we end the episode, I wanted to ask Matt, do you want to, you know, share anything in terms of like what you've been watching, any entertainment picks for our listeners?
Oh, actually, so while I was feeling sorry for myself with my poorly tooth, I started finally, well, I say finally, for the third time, I've started playing Cyberpunk.
Ooh.
Now, I'm not playing it on my Switch 2, which is what I was going to do, but then everyone recommended I just use a proper bigger screen and a more capable console. So on PlayStation 5 Pro, I'm playing Cyberpunk, and it's good. I'm really enjoying it so far. It's a proper immersive, going to destroy your social life, lots to do kind of game. But hey, I'm finished with Baldur's Gate 3, so I'm ready to disrupt my life again. Other than that, what am I watching at the moment? Oh, I treated myself to a subscription to Crunchyroll. Ooh. So I am diving into anime, God help me. I'm hoping that will reduce my toxicity score.
I'm surprised you're only now diving into anime. I felt like I always thought you were already an anime person.
No, like I've watched plenty, like, you know, you kind of have to have watched some anime to speak Japanese, mm-hmm. I feel. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think I'm using it as a comfort watch. So I'm watching old anime.
Does it have Cardcaptor Sakura?
I think it probably does. Actually, Cardcaptor Sakura might even be on Netflix.
No, I don't think so. Cardcaptor is one of my favorites. Absolutely.
I never watched that, but I know that's a big...
Can you share with me your... No, I'm kidding. Okay, while you do that, I will say, I mean, it's been a while since I've been on the podcast, so I've been like storing up like lists of recommendations, but they're probably a bit old by now. I will shout out that I watched Adolescence finally, which was really good. And most recently, and it comes to my memory, is I've been watching Arisu in Borderland, and it's incredible. It's really good. It's a Japanese TV series, two seasons right now. The third is coming out in September, and it's widely thought of as what Squid Game the series was based off of, but obviously Squid Game having churned out like two more seasons since it's like huge, like, I don't know, success, is a lot more deviated storyline wise I think from Arisu and Borderland. But basically, you know, this dystopian world where people playing games to...
You're kind of late to the party. This was made in like 2020.
I am super late to the party, I know. But that's why I finally got around to watching it. I think I'm resistant.
If you're enjoying it.
Well,
I
am really liking it. But Matt, you might appreciate this. I started out with the dubbed version. And I was like, yeah, just easier to, you know, pay attention while I'm not looking, right? And then I could not. It was too grating. I was like, this is not great. So I turned on the subs.
I've never quite figured out if it's snobby or not, because even in languages I don't speak,
same,
I prefer the sub.
No, I'll watch like Spanish or German TV shows and like try my best to leave the dub on, but I cannot. It just something about it feels so weird, even if the voice acting is really great. So
yeah, and sometimes it's excellent. I feel like Squid Game's a good example where it's pretty strong as well. And video games, like the last couple of years, like Japanese games into English have got incredible dubbing and, yeah, voice acting and stuff. And Expedition, why have I forgotten the number? 33. Oh my God. Did I just get outgamed?
Yes! I'm the gamer. You're the lamer. Hey.
In that, the French dub and the English dub are both incredibly high level, and they almost feel like different games when you're playing in French. Yeah. I don't know. I feel fancy.
Wow.
So yeah, dubbing is coming along, but why? I think it's snobbery. I think it's just snobbery.
Maybe.
But yeah, I'll take the Alice in Borderland recommendation.
And I will go use Crunchyroll. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining this week. And stay tuned. We will probably do a couple more of these audio-only episodes until Devendra gets back. But we appreciate you always. And if you have any thoughts, again, send us an email. Well, that's it for the episode, everyone. Thank you, as always, for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our former managing editor, Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find Matt Smith online at...
Oh, I guess that's Matt Smith. That's Matt spelled with one T. That's where I am in most places.
And if you want to send me your Cardcaptor Sakura favorite costumes, you can send them to me on Threads, where I am at Sherlinstagram, CHERLYNNSTAGRAM. You can also email us your thoughts on the show at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review wherever you're listening, because it helps people discover us. And then subscribe on whatever gets podcasts. Bye. I don't even go out in the sun much. Like, I'm a vampire